is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Federal Reserve monetary policy and the federal budget, both of concern for Veronique Durigy of the Mercatus Center. First to comment on the news, producer price index, says the Wall Street Journal, increased more than expected, adding to concerns that the Fed, that's Jerome Powell and the Federal Reserve Board, will need to hold interest rates higher for longer. Supplier prices rose 6% in January. Veronique, a very good evening to you. We've watched for most of a year Jerome Powell and his reaction to market reaction, political pressure. And so far, he has said repeatedly he will raise the rates as long as it takes to reach the 2% goal for inflation in America. We're very far from it, somewhere in the sixes. And every time he says that, there are doubters mostly on Wall Street, but doubters in industrial America as well. The question of recession is almost secondary at that point to, does Powell believe 2% is achievable and in the time frame that he's given us? And now we get another report that suggests it's still far away. How do you measure the Federal Reserve chatter? It's just chatter immediately that in the March meeting, it won't be a quarter point, but it'll be a half a point. Is that a good turn? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Yeah, I think it is a good turn. It is a good turn. In fact, I've always been baffled about all the talks about easing now already when we were still at 6%. I just thought it was all premature. And I thought it was that Jerome Powell, was actually doing a pretty good job at insisting that rates were going to have to go higher than people thought, and that he was really committed to doing it. And this is a message he's been actually really consistent on, especially in the last few months. And it precisely because he could tell that people weren't believing him. But that was always the risk, right? You ease, and then you don't actually see the numbers going in the right direction. And there was some easing in terms of expectation. When you go to 0.25, effectively, you could be sending a signal that actually you're not serious, or you're kind of maybe thinking you're really close to being done, I think that there's people have been disillusioned by that notion.
We have competing metaphors. There is soft landing, which is that the Federal Reserve manages to use monetary policy and to avoid a recession or to have a slow recession. We have hard landing, which I think is a recession plus, maybe stagflation, maybe depression, maybe the end of the world. We have this new one, no landing, because the U.S. continues to report growth, at least anticipating growth in the first quarter. We had a very big higher number in January, as you know. And as of these last hours, we had a good retail number for January. People are not only keeping their jobs and not being laid off, but they're spending the money they get for their jobs. Does this in any way indicate the road ahead? Have we got a strong economy that the Federal Reserve wants to tame? Have we got an economy that doesn't care about the Federal Reserve? How do you read these contrary statistics?
Well, so for instance, the retail number, when you adjust for inflation, it actually doesn't look good. We're not where we were at the beginning of 2021. It's still not good. What people call good, I'm baffled by. But I think it is for sure that the economy is in a weird place. But there is just a lot of firing that is happening, a lot of laying off people. I mean, what we could be seeing is like a lot of people returning to the workplace because they're sensing that things may be dicey, not finding a job now. But all that's going to matter in the end is whether the Fed is able to control inflation. It's managed to do a little bit of this. There's still an enormous amount to do. And more importantly, lifting the foot of the pedal may actually be sending even more of the wrong message.
The president was very clear in his State of the Union message that he is a defender of Social Security, entitlement, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and other entitlements. And he very cleverly put the Republicans in the position of claiming they weren't going to reform Social Security. However, you have a column at Creators Syndicate that makes it very clear we're walking down a path where no one needs to reform it because eventually it will cut itself. I won't ask how much time we have. I will say that right now you've given me the statistic that entitlements are 70% of the federal budget. What is to be done? What would address that? And is anybody in Washington listening, Veronique?
So mandatory spending, so that's all the part of government that pretty much grow on autopilot. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, a few other programs, and interest on the debt. That's 70% of the budget. And it's 70% of the budget that are like growing exponentially and are going to be consuming more and more of our budget. It's not that we need to do nothing it is true that if we do nothing, like, which is, I find absolutely baffling that to listen to Biden and then to listen to the Republicans who are echoing what he's saying, that they're not going to be touching Social Security and Medicare, because really what it means is that doing nothing means cutting benefits. First, there's a technical reason for this. It's like when the trust fund dries out, whether it's for one part of Medicare or whether it's Social Security, for Social Security, it'll happen in 2033. Automatically, the system, Social Security, reverts to a pay-as-you-go system, and that means above 20% cuts. That is what happens if we do nothing. Now, it's not a bad thing. We're going to have eventually, over time, to cut more than 20%. But what is problematic here is that a lot of people, the cut will be across the board. And while most seniors are overrepresented in the top income quintile, some seniors actually really depend on Social Security. So not doing anything, waiting for the cuts to happen automatically, basically take away the ability to really think of reforms that we could be doing that are moving us towards more a system that is helping those who truly need it.
We have then an autopilot for reduction. Is means testing a reform? Do they talk about that anymore? Or is that, am I antique? Is that a 20th century idea?
Yeah. No one talks about anything right now. People think it's too dangerous politically to talk about it. And so for the last, I think since 2016, no Republican, no one is talking about reforming these programs. But yes, means tested is absolutely on the table. And the truth of the matter is if they wait until the last minute to do reform of Social Security, the program as we know it, meaning universal and meaning with a link between contributing and benefits. So it's not so much that you don't earn the benefits that you're going to get, but you have to earn and pay into the system to become eligible. It's always people who are currently working who are paying for your benefits. But there is a link, an indirect link between the benefits actually becoming eligible and the contribution that you're making. And so that aspect of the program will disappear. I don't think it's a bad idea, but for people who actually really truly value that aspect of the system, they cannot wait until the last minute, because I can guarantee you that either they're going to do nothing, like if they do nothing, it means benefits are cut and we go to a pay-as-you-go system,
right.
Meaning that you only pay the payroll tax collected, pays for the benefits and nothing more, or it goes to a system that depends on general funds. General funds, they're going to then decide to raise taxes on some people and cut benefits for some people. It's going to be the fact that it becomes part of general funds. It's going to be renegotiated over time, and it becomes more a welfare program.
Veronique Tourigy, Mercatus Center. I'm John Bass.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. wait, no longer needed. That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff, even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.